struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Welcome to the show. I'm here today with our guest, Bethany Snyder. Beth, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. We have beautiful weather here. It's a beautiful fall day.
Oh, I love it. We're in Oklahoma City. It's like mid-70s, nice little chill in the air. Wind's not too damaging. But tell us what you do with Snyder Strategies.
Yeah, so I, a few years ago, started my consulting firm for nonprofits called Snyder Strategies. And I work with organizations to develop kick-ass grassroots strategies. So I mainly work with membership organizations and mainly in the healthcare world, because that's kind of my niche. But I work with them to help them better engage their members in their advocacy program so they can pass good policy and raise more money.
See, that's fantastic. And when we spoke not too long ago, I mentioned that you were the first person I had talked to that deals with nonprofits and getting in to deal with legislation. That's something that we often forget about, that you can be part of a group that handles something at the actual official level and not just help the people that you want to help, but also make it easier to help them in the future. So I love what you're doing. And we're going to talk today about how to create your advocacy roadmap and what that might look like. So I'm just going to kick it over to you to start this thing off.
Oh, sure. So first, when I start talking to organizations about advocacy, the first thing that I really talk about is mindset. So I know we hear this a lot, and that might surprise you, but many organizations or organizational leaders just have this thought that they can't do it and that there's not a place for them. They're not policy experts. Other people are doing that. So why should I? And I heard this great, I think she was the former president of the Minneapolis Foundation, or maybe, I think so, or Council of Foundations, who said, nonprofits love being in love with the problems, and we need to start being in love with the solutions. And that's what I think about when I think about legislative advocacy. So many of, you know, your listeners, they run organizations that serve the hungry, help house the homeless, provide critical services to people in need. And they are really on the front lines of our biggest social problems. And then we have our lawmakers who are trying to solve these social problems with little experience with them, maybe having never, ever dealt with them. And so I really implore nonprofits to use their expertise to help inform the public policy process so we can start solving these, you know, these big social problems. These social problems are not, we know they're not individually driven, they are systems driven. And we need to change our systems to change them.
See, I love that. And you remind us that we can get involved in the legislative process, even as a nonprofit. But of course, there are some pitfalls to watch out for. And I'm sure you're going to remind us what those are.
Right. I mean, that's what everyone, I can list you all the things that people say to me whenever I talk to them. So number one is we're a nonprofit. We can't get involved in politics. So a lot of times people conflate policy and politics. Now, obviously they're related. You need to have some sort of political understanding or nature or know how politics informs the process. But politics and policy are very different, especially in the eyes of the IRS. So policies, I mean, that's just these, you know, state legislative, you know, governmental rules that rule our world, you know, that make things happen or not. But politics is really around parties, elections, and candidates. So as long as you stay away from parties, so talking about Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Green, whoever, as long as you stay away from candidates, saying this candidate's better than that candidate, or this candidate believes this, that, or the other, and staying away from elections, which actually I'll talk about how you can still get involved in elections, you are fine in the eyes of the IRS. As long as you stick to issue advocacy and talking about your issue, it's fine. So another thing that people say is, again, back to the politics things, well, that's politicized, you know, that's politics. Now, many things have been politicized in our world that are not politics. Again, big, kind of big P versus little P stuff. So, you know, again, we can all think of the big political issues. And even though those things have been politicized, they're not politics. So let's say they decide to like politicize fire hydrants someday. It doesn't mean that they're political. it means that someone has politicized them. It still means if you advocate for more fire hydrants, you can still advocate for more fire hydrants. So that's something. So as long as you are talking about education, hunger policy, housing policy, healthcare policy, immigration policy, veteran policy, like whatever it is, you can do that.
See, I think that's important to know that you're not handcuffed in the political world. I've got a friend that does a great job rescuing and rehabilitating feral cats. Now, she could go talk to local lawmakers at a local, state, or federal level about helping fund some things that she's doing, change the policy regarding how they're treated in the back end or whatever have you, and still be able to meet the standards according to the IRS.
Absolutely. I think feral cat sounds like an awesome advocacy issue, actually. I mean, I'm sure like because the state or the county or the city, they have rules and regulations about animal cruelty, about how many animals people can have in their homes, about how animals can be treated. All of these things are decided by elected officials and could potentially impact her work. So if she's, I'm not sure what her mission is. I know it's to save feral cats, but if she eventually wants like all feral cats to be free and living in the woods, that's one set of public policy. Or she thinks all feral cats should have homes and be living with humans. I have no idea. I don't even have a cat. I have a dog. So I know very little about cats. But whatever, those kind of things to help stem the problem that she's ultimately trying to solve can happen at the government level.
How did you get started on the whole legislative business? Did you like work for a senator or something of that nature?
I never even knew the jobs that I had were available when I was like a young thing. So I knew kind of when I was in high school, I was always that person who was like organizing all the things. And maybe that could just be like a party or like going to the movies. But I was like the natural organizer among my friends. And so then, so that's one thing. I just like organizing people. So that this is a skill set I have.
You go over here. This is your job. You bring the popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. Just tasking, saying, now this is the date, give, you know, just like all the things. And I wasn't even involved in student government or anything. Like that did not appeal to me, interestingly enough, looking back. And then I went to college, and this might, your listeners, I'm sure you'll laugh, but I got a degree in sociology and women's studies. And of course, my parents are like, oh my God, what is this child going to do? So I was my senior year in college, and I kind of like, I just knew I wanted to help the world. And I went to my, and this is kind of a funny story. I went to the career office and they're like, well, what do you want to do? Because my friends who are like all business majors said they went to the career office and they helped them find internships. So I was like, I go to the same school as them. I pay tuition. So I went and they're like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to work on social justice or work on this. And they're like, we don't help people work on. So like, they were like, do you want to work for Colgate? Like they had like no idea, no clue. Anyway. So I was like, well, that is not helpful. So I went to my sociology professors and one of them said, hey, there's this internship in DC. And I think I'd only been to DC once or twice as a child. Like I think last one was in eighth grade. There's this internship at DC at this think tank, this policy think tank. Do you want to apply? And I was like, sure. And I mean, going to DC was not even in my mind. I mean, was not even in my mind. And I applied. And again, I was sometimes naivete can be a great thing. And it was a national fellowship. I was going to the University of Iowa. I applied. Three of us were selected as a national competitive fellowship. When I got to DC, the other two winners were from Harvard and Berkeley. And anyway, so they're like, how did you end up here? I'm like, how did I end up here? Anyway.
I'll ask the questions around here.
Yeah. So anyway, I ended up living in DC for my first 5 years, and that pretty much cemented my love of policy, of public policy. And then I ended up working for the American Heart Association. I'm helping pass like clean indoor air laws. That was in the late 90s, early 2000s. Which it's hard to even think. Like that talks about how policy can impact cultural change and vice versa. You can't even think about smoking at Best Buy or the grocery store now. Like, but that was just common, right? Maybe you can in Oklahoma, but I don't think so. And then I got a job with, I worked for a United States Senator in his state office on healthcare issues. And pretty much that's what I've been doing. So I always tell people that I've sat on all sides of the advocacy desk. So I've been a grassroots advocacy director. I've been a lobbyist and I've been a Senate staffer. So I see all the vantage points and can look to see, you know, how to be the most successful in that arena.
That's crazy. I know you staff for a senator from Minnesota, which is actually where my wife and I grew up. I say mostly. I don't know if I'm grown yet, but I mentioned the hometown where I'm from. She's like, oh, yeah, I've been there. And I'm like, look, no one has been to my hometown. No one travels through there. No one would ever say or claim to be from there. And all the people that are in Fergus Falls listening to this, I'm sorry, but no one really like, yeah, that's a destination. That's where we're headed or where we're going. No one says that. So to talk to you and you're like, oh yeah, I've been through Fergus Falls. You're like, what? That is insane. That just doesn't happen. But, you know, kudos to the internship and getting into working in policy and the back end of stuff. That is just, you're right. It's not something people talk about in high school or college, especially in the middle of the country. It's just not something that comes up.
I have just seen the disconnect between policymakers and the people in the front lines. People who are trying to do the best most of the time, trying to make policies around how do we feed more of the hungry? How do we house the homeless? How do we make sure that our small business owners have the supports and the funding that they need? And then people, who may or may have not ever worked on those issues. And I knew when I was a Senate staffer, it was incredibly valuable to me to be able to pick up the phone at any time and be able to call those subject matter experts. If I had a bill in front of me around diabetes, I want to make sure I knew who the American Diabetes Association government affairs director was from Minnesota, right? So I could be like, hey, how is this going to impact people in Minnesesota? Is this good for people with diabetes? Or, I'm only so smart, but I want to be able to talk to the people, who really know this. And so it's really critical. And these offices are looking for that. Again, so when I worked for the senator, I covered healthcare issues, not just healthcare. And so that covered everything from like pediatric dentistry to like medical device companies. I mean, to insurance markets, to public health. I mean, everything in between. And then I also covered nutrition and seniors issues. So again, I always say I'm a pretty smart person, but I can't know everything within those huge policy areas. So my job was to know who do I need to go to get the information to help be sure I can advise my boss.
That's definitely how I feel about it. I'm on one layer of it, people look to me like I'm some kind of expert on nonprofits, and I do know a good deal about it, but they get that impression because I bring on the experts to my show like yourself and I interview them. And we get the behind the scenes. We get a whole page full of notes from our pre-talk, and we talk about Minnesota and all sorts of different connections. And you have to know who to call. You have to be involved. You have to build up your network. I know networking to some people is just kind of a dirty word, but it's about figuring out the people that are out there doing good stuff that care about you and you care about helping each other. And if you are running a nonprofit, I think it is vital, as Bethany is saying, to get a hold of your local city council member, local senator, local representative, whomever is in your circle, whoever you can help affect. Because even if you want to give your opinion, that's one thing. But when they have come across people looking for that service, or like, hey, who do you know in this industry? Now all of a sudden you've got a senator saying who you are to someone else and helping bring more people into your network. And that's an amazing place to be.
Well, and most of the leaders of nonprofits are already really well connected to, again, I mean, usually leaders of nonprofits are running in a kind of social circle where they are connected to their local mayors or city council. And I always tell people the lower you get in government, the more concentrated your efforts are. So where, like, if you were to call the United States Senator's office, even if you knew the staffer that you should be talking to, like they're talking to hundreds of people. If five people call the mayor's office about that pothole, that somewhat, they're going to be like, what the hell's going on with this pothole? Like, it's going to bring attention to it. Like, not five people do not call the mayor's office about very many things. So, and same with city council. And so I always encourage people, like we talk about dipping your toe into advocacy, like one of the easiest things to do, and it's not really that easy, but is invite them to come visit. I know we're in COVID times, but outside of COVID times,
the before times is what we call that.
Before, and hopefully we'll be in the after, but invite them to take a tour of your food shelf. Invite them to come and see the operations and talk about like the increased number of people that you're serving because of this pandemic. That's like the easiest thing. And you might not get the mayor right away. And I also want to caution people, like if they offer their staff person, that is great. Take it. Yes.
Absolutely.
First of all, yeah, that staff person, especially at the federal level, I always talk about their gatekeepers. So like if my, I would never let my boss go anywhere I'd never been before or meet with someone I'd never met with. A, because I have to write the memo on it anyway. And so I'm just going to be better at it if I've talked to these people and seen where we're going. And it just makes sense, right? Is this going to be a better meeting? Help me help you. If I know what your goals are, if I know what you want to say. So if he's going to go on tour of a community clinic, I would always go do a pre-tour first, or I'd always make sure I knew who the people were. So it is about that relationship building. So if you have the mayor come, they send their chief of staff first, that's fine. That is your road and that's your path. But then also that, especially at the federal level, if I'm the staffer on healthcare, it's best for me to best for me to know what you're talking about anyway, because when it comes to the end of the day, I'm going to be writing the memo, I'm going to be advising. So you might as well get to know, become best friends with me, because I'm your best asset, you know, to that policymaker.
When I was on the board of Books by Vets, we had a book launch, and this was part of Walk with Warriors, which I was involved in. I wrote one of the chapters for that. And we reached out to our local representatives and our local officers, and we got a host from a local radio station, a county commissioner, a state representative, and a state senator show up. And it wasn't more than 25 or 30 people, but they got to see what was going on in their backyard in arenas they cared about. And we were so touched to have continued support from these representatives. But the radio show host, who wasn't a veteran, wasn't really involved in this stuff, who showed up, he went out and did a Facebook Live in his car right after this to talk about, even though it wasn't his area of expertise or his zone of genius, he went to talk about how touching it was that these kinds of things are happening in his area and what he could do, you know, to be a better part of this thing. And that's just leaps and bounds beyond what we would expect from some kind of event like this.
No, and that's another great point. I think something else that people get tripped up about when it comes to policy, and I'm not a policy expert, I don't have all the numbers, I don't have all the research, which of course, you know, if you're really advocating for something very detailed, you need to have your research. But it's really stories that people hear and remember. So I think I remember hearing a statistics, which is why podcasts are so important. It's like, you're so likely to remember a statistic that you're just told, but if you hear it wrapped up in a story, you're 80% more likely or whatever. So, and I just remember with my boss, like the things he said on the floor, on the Senate floor, they weren't the statistics in the fact sheet. They weren't the statistics that the lobbyist told me. They were the stories from the mom who was trying to get mental health care for her child. It was about the woman who couldn't get diabetes care until she got on Medicaid, right? Those are the stories that really impacted him and that he thought about and remembered. And then then the data is just the data. That helps us get to the end point, but it's really those stories that touch people's hearts.
Oh yeah. You're going to be a public speaker one day if you're listening to this. And if you are listening to this, you are a public speaker. Whenever you talk about your programs, your nonprofit, what it is that you're trying to do. But one of the things you learn is, You teach a little mini lesson and you tell a story to back it up. You teach story, teach story, teach story. And as you go through that process, you're able to then attach the new information you learned to a story that you can visualize and follow along with. And that's what really creates that impact and people are going to hold on to. Because when you do your galas or your events and you bring people together and you talk about, you know, that you've helped feed 400 people this week and every week since you guys opened, that's great, and they might remember that fact, but if you tell the story about how Tina, who is a single mother of three, all living on the streets, were able to, through that nutrition that you provided, were able to build a stable foundation and then get out of poverty and get into a place where they could grow and mature and live life, that's the story that they're going to remember and they're going to take forward and why they're going to care about what you do as an organization.
One other thing that comes to mind is something else that I hear people say on why they don't want to get involved in advocacy is, because you brought up donors, and we'll talk about this a little bit. My donors don't care about that. My donors don't care about policy or the political world. And I, of course, I say that bullshit. That is not true. And if you were to be able to, and some organizations have done this, match up your donor database to public, like to candidate, you know, databases, there will be overlap. There's like I don't even remember, I should have gotten the number, like $8 billion raised in the last election. That was some of those people were your donors. Okay. There weren't 8 billion other people that gave money. And so my whole point is they're already engaged. They're already watching. You're just missing out another opportunity to connect to something that they care about. So first of all, if they are politically giving and political donors, they might have connections to these offices already that you could be leveraging. But also by engaging in legislative advocacy, you're expanding the ways in which you can talk to your members. So how I talk about this, I think about legislative advocacy as a donor, as a member engagement tool or donor engagement tool. I think about it as one more way to bring you closer to your donors and members. So a lot of people are going to give because they want to give to help the hungry. They want to house folks. But some people are also going to want to give because they want to solve hunger and they want to solve homelessness. And so by connecting people to that, and sometimes people don't always want to give money. Sometimes they want to do something else. And if you're giving them an opportunity to say, hey, you can also solve hunger by calling your elected official, by calling your member of Congress and telling them that we need SNAP money for our state, that is another way to engage them in your work without having your hand out. But then we also know that people who give money, who are donors, who are involved in advocacy, give more than donors not involved in advocacy. So advocates are 7 times more likely to donate to your organization than a non-advocate. And when I say that, it totally makes sense. So one of the things I talk about is when I first started working at this really big health organization as their grassroots advocate, I had these goals. Like, okay, I got to, you know, recruit so many advocates, grassroots advocates. And this is one of these kind of organizations that has a big walk every year. And I knew they had 1 million people at their walk because they talk about it. We have 1 million people attend a walk. And I was like, oh, great. So I'm just going to go over to I'm just going to go to fundraising. And I'm just going to, you should already have 1 million people involved in advocacy, right? Because you have they're like, no, you should go to like health fairs and science fairs and go out. I was like, well, why would I go and ask complete strangers who have no connection to our organization to become an advocate? We have 1 million people who have given us money who walk on a day that we haven't even asked yet. And so I should not even have to leave this building to get my advocates. And so my goal there was to become best friends with the development directors and then explain to them, like, did you know? And of course, they were scared to be involved in advocacy. But I was like, did you know if you're engaged in advocacy, do you want to raise 60% more this year or not? And they're like, well, of course, because they have a goal. And I was like, hey, if we just partner, I can get your donors to get, you know, to give more. So anyway, it's about seeing those connections and working together. Yeah, to just engage your members and donors in your mission.
I love it. I wanted to jump back a little bit. And you said you have 5 people call the mayor. That's a big deal. If you've got 5 people on your board, you could all call the mayor on this topic. If you've got 10 people, 5 could call the mayor, 3 could call this city councilman, and 2 could call the other one. And get all 3 people in local government involved at one time. And people are like, well, I'm scared to ask my board to get involved in fill in the blank, asking for funds, showing up and rolling up their sleeves, making phone calls on behalf of the organization. What would you tell those people that are scared to engage their board?
Well, I mean, all board members come with their different skills and talents, you know, and things that they enjoy doing. So, and interests. So I'm not involved in the building your board. Like, that's not my area of expertise. But I bet you can find, like, if that board member doesn't want to raise money, do they want to get involved in the advocacy? Maybe they don't want to go call their mayor. So some of the ways I encourage you to dip your toe into advocacy is, who in your community is already talking about these issues? So if you are a food bank, there is most likely a food coalition in your community. If you're Des Moines or bigger. I live in Des Moines, so I feel like I can say that. So, and there's one here in River Smith. So I'm sure in Oklahoma City, there's like a hunger-free Oklahoma City. You know, I'm sure there is a hunger-free organization.
I know for sure there is a veteran coalition here in Oklahoma City. I've been to one of their meetings. And for those of you that aren't familiar with coalitions, the federal and state and local level representatives and senators send their staff members to the Oklahoma Coalition for Veteran Affairs. They were there and present and updating the coalition on what was being done at the state and federal level as far as their policies and things that concern veterans. So there's just things out there.
Yeah, and that was one of my main jobs when I was a staffer, was to go to coalition meetings and show up. But find out who is doing this work already and just go to a meeting. Now, there are different kinds of coalitions. So some are more formalized and some are more informal. So some coalitions, they're just like anyone who shows up, you can show up and talk about how you feel comfortable engaging and involving in the work. Other coalitions, sometimes it's like a pay-to-play situation where you might have to pay a certain amount of money to be at the table, and then that money goes into paying for the coalition activities. So you'll want to check that out first. But most nonprofit, like a Hunger Free thing, you're probably not going to have to pay to be a part of the coalition. So yeah, go to the coalition, just hear what are people talking about. Are they talking about something? Is there some way you can contribute to that effort? There's another easy way is a sign-on letter. Oftentimes, maybe your community members will get all the nonprofits to sign a sign-on letter and say, hey, we want to advocate for this. So we want to advocate for more funding for SNAP, or we want to advocate for more funding for food banks, like whatever it is. And you just sign your org's name to that, and it's completely in line with your mission. And that's why now you can go out and show people, hey, we are engaged in the conversation. We're engaged in the solutions, and we're trying to put forward these bigger issues that we know can help solve, you know, our mission down the line.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you get to meet people in your area that are trying to do the same thing as you are. And what a better way to meet people with the same mission that you can now collaborate and form partnerships with. Maybe you are, I'm in Oklahoma City, maybe you care about the south side of feeding the homeless. Well, maybe there's someone in the central part of the city and someone on the north side. And with your powers combined, you can feed the whole stinking city, but you didn't even know the other ones existed, because that's just how laser focused you are on your mission.
No, absolutely. That's a great example. Yeah. And as I always say, like most, I'm hard pressed to find a huge legislative win that did not involve a coalition. Even at your state level. So I talked about how I was in like smoke-free campaigns at the beginning of my career. That was a huge undertaking with tons of coalition, you know, with tons of organizations, and a huge, it was called the Freedom to Breathe Coalition in Minnesota. And I, like I said, it's really hard pressed for me to see, unless it's like a little tiny discrete policy issue, you know, or a regulatory thing. If you're trying to make these sweeping changes, it has to be coalition based. You have, you know, as I say, corporations and companies, they can give money. They give money to PACs. They can give money to campaigns. They can write a check. Nonprofits' most valuable asset is their people and their donors as voters and constituents. That's all we have. And that's fine. And I'm not saying there should be any different way, but you cannot go and write a check to get what you want. Your whole thing is about getting, bringing people together and showing that the collective will of the community is to have this done.
Absolutely. And it's just another way to be involved and show the community that you live and operate in that you care about the community as a whole. And we're so much more than one issue. We're so much more than one organization. We're so much more than as one people. And you can do those things if you throw your ring in the hat and show up. You don't have to have the answer. You just have to show up and give your support.
No, definitely. I do want to touch on, so there are, so I did bring up things that you know, don't want to get involved in. So can't, you know, and right now we're in the middle of an election season. So it's a little bit high. You want to be a little hyper vigilant about how you engage in this work. So I said, don't want to get involved in camp, like parties. Don't talk about Republicans or Democrats. Like easy, just stick to the issue. Don't talk about candidates. Even if you know that one candidate has voted well or for you or whatever, don't bring it up. People can go, you can just point, you know, people can go see it for themselves. But however, we are in an election year, and there's really important ways that nonprofits can get involved in election through voter registration and voter education. So again, I kind of say this facetiously, but it's also true. The easiest way to get your policy priorities met is by just voting for people who believe the same things you do. And I know, it's harder than it sounds, but that's true. If you're trying to solve hunger and you just elect people who want to solve hunger, we will solve hunger. But of course, it's not that simple. So what nonprofits can do is really encourage people to register to vote and to vote, educate them about your issue. So one organization I work with right now works on homelessness, and our goal is to end homelessness. And so I've created a lot of education about how can we leverage this election to solve and to end homelessness? Well, when someone knocks on my door, if someone calls me, I answer it. And if it's a candidate, I take that instead of being annoyed or like I'm too busy, I take that opportunity to tell them about, hey, can you tell me about your plans to end homelessness? Use that as an opportunity to educate and to hear about them and hear about their plans. And most of the time, you know, there's so many policy issues. They don't know. They only, you know, but they only know what they don't, they only know what they know. If you're the first person to talk to them about it, then that's something that they'll know.
Yeah, at least now it's a thought in their head somewhere that they have, like, homelessness is a problem in this area. I've had people come tell me about this. And so when they are elected and they're in office and someone asks them, like, yeah, I've heard about this issue, which is true. They might not have the breadth and depth of the problem or the scope of the problem on the front, the forefront of their mind, but they'll have at least talked about it. And why not you? Why not your issue? Why not the thing that you care about? Why not?
No, absolutely. And then when they are elected, and you can always, you know, politicians love to have their ego strokes. Say, like, when you're elected, I want to tell you more about this. I want to tell you about what we're doing in this community to end homelessness, to end hunger, you know, to serve our veterans. And they'll remember that.
And the fun thing is you can tell that to every candidate that comes to your door.
Absolutely.
Are there special things that you should take into consideration if you're an organization that receives government funding?
First of all, I always say that anyone can do policy advocacy, right? It is our constitutional given right to advocate in our democratic process. So as a public, as a private citizen, you know, you can do whatever you want. Now, if you're talking on behalf of your organization and you are, you know, if you are a leader of your organization, you want to make sure that what you're saying is probably in line with your organization. But if you take government money, there are sometimes often in your government contracts or stipulated with that money, like you can't do certain things. So you want to make sure that if you do get some kind of government grant or funding that says you can't, and oftentimes it's written in, especially the federal ones and some state ones, that you can't do certain kinds of policy advocacy, then don't do it under that grant. Now, if that's 100% of your funding, you want to do it outside of work or on your lunch break, what have you. But if you are counting that time, you'll want to count it against your overall costs or another, you know, grant that you have. So that is something that you want to keep in mind if you do get some sort of government funds. But don't, I also don't give tax advice, so talk to your accountant about it.
Yeah, you know, myself as an active duty military member, I'm not allowed to endorse a candidate. Or if I do express my opinion, I have to say that it's not reflect the views of the government. So I just do myself a favor and just stay out of that kind of public conversation. You want to have a one-on-one with me, I'll tell you what I think and feel and how I feel the policy is going. But don't expect me to be blasting out on Facebook in support of or against a certain candidate or person. First off, I'm not that kind of person. Second off, I don't know if it even helps in the slightest, but that's just one way to do it. That's how, you know, the government feels about their employees, which I'm pretty sure the government's the largest employer in the U.S.
Yeah, that's why you see on people's Twitters, like, this, the opinion sprecks here of my own, you know, and if, I think if you're a leader of an org, we all have personal emails we can use and not use our organizational email. Like, there's all these ways we can still engage, but not put our organization at risk. But there's also ways to leverage your organization and use that clout that you have, that place in your community to talk about these issues and that they can be solved if we had the right kind of people, you know, making the right kind of policy decisions.
Yeah, I can just picture, you know, someone in an organization showing up to a debate at any level and bringing up an issue that your organization cares about, whether or not the candidates have researched it, that's their problem. But now you've put your conversation, your question, your matter, the thing that you care about into the public eye, into the public sphere, in your area of responsibility. And why not?
No, absolutely. And there's a lot of more sophisticated ways to get involved, especially when it comes to election. You can have a candidate town hall. You can submit questions to debates. And then I also said, don't forget about writing a letter to the editor. You can also talk to candidates through your through media advocacy and say, this is a really important issue to me. Hey, candidate for mayor, we haven't heard you talk about our homeless population and how you're working to end it. I'd love to hear, you know, and if you put that, they'll read that and maybe they'll say something about it.
Fantastic. So Bethany, tell us the best place that my listeners can get a hold of you.
Well, you can find me on my website. So that's SnyderStrategies.me. I'm also on, you know, you can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, but I'm not very active. So, but definitely through my website, and anyone can, I have a 45-minute consultation call. I love chatting with people about advocacy. I really do. And if an organization is saying, hey, we even want to get involved, or this is something we're struggling with, I tell people when I'm with them, take me for all I'm worth right now. Like, ask me questions. Like, I want to help you. So just ask me all the questions. Use as much time as you want, and I'm here for you. Yeah.
Fantastic, Bethy. Hey, thank you so much for being a guest today. I've very much enjoyed learning about advocacy and finding our secret Minnesota connection. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been awesome.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.